You were listening to The Peaceful Planet synthesized from spirit through the mediumship of Robert Murray. Listen in to The Peaceful Planet every Saturday at 12 noon Central to music from the angelic realms, including inspired songs from John Lennon, George Harrison, and Michael and the Band. This is show host Marcia McMahon inviting you to join us as we share messages from the Ascended Masters and the Archangels as we bring you into a higher vibration of love and peace for the planet. Hear my weekly interviews with cutting-edge world teachers and musical talent.
Do you like music, angels, and channeling? Are you spiritual, a psychic, or a healer? We are one on the Peaceful Planet show at www.bbsradio.com every Saturday at 12 noon Central Time.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Peaceful Planet with your show host, Marcia McMahon. We have a wonderful show prepared for you today, this glorious Saturday. And I want to mention that you were listening to our music, The Peaceful Planet, which is our theme song, and it's being synthesized from spirit through the mediumship of Robert Murray, inspired by John Lennon and George Harrison. We're going to be listening to some of their very interesting and cool songs in just a little while. We have an interesting author that we're bringing to the fore today on The Peaceful Planet. The title of his book is Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, and we're featuring Jerry E. Smith. So stay tuned. We're going to be tuning into him after some announcements. I have some very exciting news for our listening audience. This past week, I was contacted by BodyMindSpiritJourneys.com to co-host a France, Mary Magdalene, and Black Madonna pilgrimage. This is going to be a sacred journey to France from August 30th through September 12th, and I'm really excited to be leading this. I'm going to be a featured speaker along with Mark Amaru Pinkham and Andrea Pinkham. I've had Mark on my show a couple of times. He's a very, very good scholar of sacred sites, and I am an art historian as well as a spirituality channel, and most of you know that about me, those of you that listen to the show. And I have something really unique to bring to this tour because I'm going to be highlighting the spiritual aspects of these sacred sites. And I want to describe some of what this is all about and ask you, if you are listening and interested, to send me an email at Marcia, MarciaDi at charter.net. And I want to describe this a little bit. What is a pilgrimage? A pilgrimage is a journey to a holy, sacred place to usher one into the presence of the divine. Pilgrimage is an important part of spiritual life for many people on the path. By taking time to separate yourself from the everyday concerns of your world and spend time traveling to sacred sites full of power and special meaning, pilgrimage becomes an act of transformation that can change your life in many positive ways. The France Mary Magdalene Tour will be highlighting Mary Magdalene, her relics, and the secret holy bloodline, the Black Madonna, and the origin and the present-day place in it in the return of the divine feminine, the Holy Grail, what it is and how you can embody it, the Knights Templar, masters of alchemy, the Cathars and their heretical practices, including a visit to Montsecur, the elusive secrets of the René Le Château mystery, and the Gothic and Romanesque cathedrals dedicated to Mary Magdalene or the goddess, Notre Dame, Saint Marie de la Mer, and other very famous sites, Chartres Cathedral, and we'll get into the sacred geometry as well. So again, I want to encourage you to also visit the website for this tour where you can sign up for the tour. And if you'd like to be on my mailing list to find out more about the tour, please email me today at Marcia, MarciaDi, at charter.net. And the website to check out the Mary Magdalene France tour is www.bodymindspiritjourneys.com. And you can also, I invite you to visit my website where you can find more information from Princess Diana and the other Ascended Masters on a variety of topics, including world peace, at www.dianaspeakstotheworld.com. And we want to also set the mood for our show today by playing some special music. The music that we're about to hear is titled Radical Dolphin, and to give you a little bit of background on this extraordinary music that we're featuring on the show, Bob Murray, who works with spirit like I do and is extremely talented, can somehow hear the vibrations in the next realm and is receiving information in the form of music, which he translates into a synthesized version. You may have heard Bob's interview last week. It was wonderful. In any event, I am working on another aspect of the same project where Bob is creating music for our show from George Harrison and John Lennon as channeled, and I am writing lyrics after I listen to his musical pieces. I receive their exact words to the songs. So I thought it would be interesting today to tie in a song that fits with the theme of our special author and some of the lyrics in this song. I want you to listen carefully. It's called Radical Dolphin. It's about the use of sonar waves and how the sonar waves are affecting the dolphins worldwide. And I know many of you are probably into dolphins and find them very loving and wonderful creatures. They're supposedly very advanced. And so John has made some comments about this, and I want you to hear it. I think it's really well done. The piece has been done by Christopher Moores, who used to host one of our programs on BBS, and he put the music from Bob and the lyrics from myself together into a song. So we're going to listen to the music, and then we'll get back to our special guest in just a moment. So I'd like to play Radical Dolphin Mix by Chris Moores, as originally written by Bob Murray, and the lyrics are by me.
Radical dolphin swimming the sea, know something of a bird. Sees and feels it's true, living in deep blue, amid shimmering waters. Radical dolphin feeling something new, about to be born. Vibrations of the deep. that for beaches, let it be. Onto ocean bright, really isn't right. Our longing in the water. Radical dolphins smiling up at you. All is one and all is well. Garland laughter days beneath the ocean waves. Friendship in the water. The dolphins proclaim peace throughout the ocean and ask for no more sonar waves. From war machines. A whole new day, a whole new way. Get sunshine in the sea. Carry the coast, radical dolphin. The new earth is being born. Radical dolphin. Living in the blue, amid shimmering waters. Radicals often feeling something new about being born on Earth. Singing new songs, gliding right along, harmony. Your part to help the planet. Save the whales and dolphins.
Welcome back, everyone, and I hope you enjoyed listening to Radical Dolphin as interpreted by Chris Morse. And written originally by Bob Murray, and then the lyrics were written by yours truly, myself, as inspired from John Lennon. So anyway, we are going to begin our interview with Jerry E. Smith. The title of his book is Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. And we are going to open our phone lines if you would like to speak with Jerry or ask a question. Toll-free at 877-876-5227. Toll-free Canada is 888-810-8322. And I've had Jerry on my show before, and he's a very good researcher. He's got a lot of good information, and he's written a number of different books. He examines claims that there are aerosols being deliberately injected into the atmosphere. He quotes Secretary Cohen about the use of weather warfare and its dangers that might fall into the hands of terrorists. So I wonder if you could just elaborate on this entire issue, Jerry, and get us started on Secretary Cohen's remarks and why you think he made them. And what kinds of projects have been in the works and in existence, primarily covert projects, by the U.S. government, and what can you tell us about all of that?
All right. Yes, I begin the book. It's a 400-page book. I open with this quote, and it's a 400-page analysis of whether this quote is true or not. And this is Defense Secretary Cohen speaking in his official capacity at he delivered the keynote address to a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, U.S. strategy in 1997. And there he said, and I quote, "Others are engaging, even in an eco type of terrorism, whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts." Now, I believe that if the Secretary of Defense says something like that, we should pay some attention to it. And
absolutely.
I concluded that he knew that these mysterious others had this technology because the United States has that technology and has been developing that technology for a very long time. In fact, most people think weather control is some futuristic science fiction stuff, when in fact it's an everyday activity. It's going on right this minute as we speak in some places of the world.
And
for example,
it certainly isn't good for the environment, and it may even be contributing to more greenhouse gases and other world calamities. So go ahead, yes.
Right. There is that downstream effect, that whenever you do something here, it has effects downstream, and some of the effects are unexpected. As I was saying, in 2005, Business Week reported that China was spending $40 million a year and has 35,000 people employed full-time in weather management. Now, here weather management is defined as cloud seeding, so as to tease more precipitation out of storms so as to relieve droughts, fog dispersal from airports, and hail suppression so that hail does not fall and destroy crops. Now, China, you may remember, is upwind of North Korea. North Korea has been in a drought for the last decade, while China has been aggressively massaging the weather that passes over the Asian continent, and has quite literally been stealing rain from North Korea. This could just be a case of bad neighboring, a case of oops, sorry, or it could be an intentional covert war being waged by the Chinese against the North Koreans in order to ensure the North Koreans stay their obedient lapdogs and buy Chinese food from them.
That makes perfect sense. Now that I think about it, that could be a very covert strategy, and I wouldn't put it past China, whom I don't really trust because of some of the things they've done in the past. And, you know, so I'm curious, though, about some of the, you mentioned Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison, and she introduced the Weather Modification Research and Technology Transfer Authorization Act. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Right. Now, a lot of people got very upset about this because of a number of reasons. Again, most Americans are blissfully unaware of how much is taking place. And this act would have called for a weather advisory board to keep track of what technology is being developed and issue grants to fund more development of technology. Now, Americans not knowing that we have this technology went, well, if we don't pass this bill, then they won't have the money, then we won't be having this technology, when in fact we've had this technology for more than 50 years. The ability to exceed clouds was developed in the 1940s. It was used as a weapon of war by the U.S. military during the Vietnam War, Operation Popeye. Operation Popeye was ongoing for some 8 years. It expended 47,000 units of cloud seeding materials over four countries, North and South Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, in violation of international law, at a cost of about $21.6 million. When the United States
and what were they feeding the clouds with? What chemicals were being used?
I believe it was mostly silver iodide, but there were several experimentals being used. Propane is one being used. Dry ice was one being used, but I think it was primarily silver iodide. When it was discovered
that
it was ongoing.
That couldn't help the health of the soldiers on the ground or the people, the population of Vietnam either. So
right.
None
well,
of
you know, another aspect of this is that my book is. The title is Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, but it's not about just the weather and it's not about just the military.
No, it is. To cover a lot of controversy.
In terms of ways to see this thing as more than just the weather, it's really about the entire environment and using the environment as a weapon and using it as a profit-making device also. In Vietnam, we had another environmental crime that took place was the destruction of the jungle itself through defoliants. The military realized that the jungle provides shelter and sustenance for the enemy, and they rationalized that if the jungle were gone, the enemy would be deprived of this shelter and sustenance, and they poured literally millions of gallons of defoliants, Agent Orange, Agent White, etc., over the jungle. This has caused tremendous birth defects. And the avian flu that is circling the globe and ready to pounce on Europe started in Vietnam, in those areas where we had poured the defoliants on. So this is our disease coming back to bite us. Now, after the Senate discovered what was going on, that Operation Popeye was real and ongoing, Senator Claiborne Pell, Democrat, Rhode Island, called for a UN, an international treaty to prevent the militaries of the world from doing this stuff. And they did eventually sign into law the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or any other hostile use of environmental modification techniques. And after that, prior to that, the United States was spending between $40 and $140 million a year and had 700 degreed scientists working on environmental modification technology. After we signed the treaty, the federal budget went to zero and these jobs vanished. And Uncle Sam did not say, oh, well, can't do that anymore. It simply went covert. It went off
black.
Budget. Exactly.
Yeah. So it was this act called the NROD. Was that the name of it? There was an
NMOD.
NROD, yeah.
Exactly.
And it was passed by the United Nations in 1978. And so you theorize, and I concur that this is probably a fact, that if we were told not to do it anymore and we signed a treaty, and then all of a sudden the whole program, you know, disappears overnight, it had to have gone black. There's no other explanation. Explain what going black is to our audience for those who may be new to conspiracy theories and government conspiracy, the secret government.
Right. Well, there are several ways you can do it. There's the black budget, the hidden budget. The CIA doesn't have to tell Congress what they're doing. They only have to tell Congress how much they're spending. Congress, in theory, has the power of the purse over the CIA. But the CIA doesn't tell them what they're doing, just how much it costs, and they can rubber stamp the check or not. Also, CIA is infamous for having developed its own funding resources, and some of these funding resources are very controversial and still hotly debated, such as during the Iran-Contra affair. It became apparent that the CIA was a drug runner, was selling drugs in order to fund the Contra war.
I'm sorry, Jerry. Your voice is breaking up due to us being on a high-speed digital line, and I need to ask you to repeat everything you said just now slowly, if you would.
Okay. There are several ways that Uncle Sam can get around, that government agencies can hide what they're doing. One is to develop covert forms of funding, such as it's been alleged that the CIA are actually drug runners. During the Iran-Contra affair, there's a lot of evidence that they were in fact selling drugs in order to fund the Iran-Contra war. The more common way to do it is what is called civilian contractors. You hear about civilian contractors nightly on your local news in the war in Iraq. And what civilian contractors are is these are civilians who are doing jobs for the military, who because they're civilians, Congress doesn't get to have any oversight, doesn't get to know what they're doing. Again, they just get to pay the check without having a clue what's going on. And right now in the U.S., much of this weather as a weapon is being developed by civilian contractors. In the U.S., one of the largest companies is Weather Modification Incorporated of Fargo, North Dakota. They have clients across the country and around the world. They're doing hail suppression in Argentina, snowpack enhancement for the ski resorts in Sun Valley, Idaho, and cloud seeding in Nevada. Now, in 2005, one of the senior scientists of Weather Modification Incorporated went on Art Bell's Coast to Coast AM radio show and outed himself as having been one of the senior scientists on Operation Popeye. This is a clear example of civilian contractors.
Mm-hmm. How interesting. Okay, so, Jerry, are you still there?
I am indeed. I was just waiting for your next question.
All right. So the NMOD of the future, you talk about that and the Project Air Force 2025, owning the weather. What is the military attempting to do now to deceive the world about that project? And tell us a little bit how that is working and how you even know of it.
Okay. What we have had since the U.S. signed the NMOD treaty, as we said, is it went out of is they changed all the words, they changed the names of things. The U.S. Air Force insists that they don't want to control the weather, but they are spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year in modifying the atmosphere. And I ask the question, what, if any, is the difference between modifying the atmosphere and controlling the weather? And one example of modifying the atmosphere is the ionospheric research they're doing with ionospheric heaters like HARP and High Pass. And
I would say that HARP thing is a really bad deal for all of us, and so few people know about this.
Exactly. HARP is the world's largest radio broadcast.
Don't you have a whole book
devoted
to HARP?
I do. My first.
Can we mention the title of your book, please, so our listeners can pick up that book, too?
I was just going to say that. My first book for Adventures Unlimited was HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. And that's HARP, H-A-A-R-P, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. It is a field of antennas on the ground in southeastern Alaska so linked together as to work as one giant antenna. And it is today the world's largest radio broadcasting station. But it's not designed to broadcast for human ears. It's designed to inject 3.6 million watts of radio frequency energy into a spot at the very top of the atmosphere in a region called the ionosphere. Now, to give you an idea what 3.6 million watts is, the largest legal AM radio station in the United States is 50,000 watts. HARP is 72,000 50,000-watt radio stations injecting their entire output into an area about 12.5 miles across by about 2.5 miles deep by about 50 or 90 miles up. This is rather like microwaving the sky. It heats the atmosphere by thousands of degrees, and in doing so, that literally blows the molecules of the atmosphere apart. And when it does that, it produces a couple of phenomena that the military have found useful. One is, when the molecules of the atmosphere are blown apart, it gives off a scream of ELF, extremely low-frequency radio waves, which penetrate deep into the earth and deep into the sea. And they have been using this to communicate with deeply submerged submarines for about 15 years. Also, when you blow the molecules apart, that changes it into an electrically charged gas called a plasma. And that plasma goes out into space and keeps going until it runs into something to stop it, like an incoming ICBM, a passing spy satellite, or the magnetic lines of force of the Earth's magnetic field, where it then spreads out. This is a ground-based Star Wars weapon system. This is the anti-missile shield that Reagan asked for.
Really, a Star Wars situation. And there are some laws, are there not, on the books now. I think Dennis Kucinich, you mentioned in your book, was instrumental in getting some laws passed about weapons.
Nope, didn't get passed. Nope.
Get passed. Okay.
No, it did not. No, let's see, Kucinich's bill, the Space Preservation Act of 2001 failed to pass. You mentioned K. Bailey Hutchinson's 2005 Weather Modification Research and Technology Transfer Authorization Act. That also failed to pass. It did get out of committee. It got put on the calendar for the Senate, and then it never came up for a vote because the Senate realized it was simply too hot a potato to deal with and pretended it wasn't there until it went away. What that would have done part of the opposition to it was not only did it fund more research into this, but it created an advisory board that was composed only of weather modification scientists and weather modification bureaucrats. It was a case of the foxes being asked to be put in charge of henhouse operations. And the folks on the ground who realized that there would be no input from farmers and homeowners and people affected by the weather modifications that they were planning raised rather a stink about it. And that's probably what killed the bill. That and the fact that by bringing this out in public, they actually would be recreating a weather modification advisory board that existed prior to the U.S. Becoming signatory to NMOD. And when we signed the environmental modification, you can't do it treaty, they took apart the weather modification advisory board that was advising Congress on where this technology stood, because they don't want Congress to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So it's really a danger to humanity, some of these projects. And I've read extensively about HARP, and I did read most of your book on HARP, and I thought it was excellent. And it is a real concern, because most Americans have never even heard of HARP or what it's all about. And I think you theorize in your book that HARP could be weaponized to create disasters like shifting of the Earth's plates, or even in some of the experiments they're doing, it could inadvertently cause earthquakes or tsunami and this kind of thing. So if you could elaborate on some of the powerful after effects of HARP, I'd be interested in your thoughts on that.
HARP is an open-air experiment in which we are all guinea pigs, in which they are experimenting with vast planetary systems, and they don't know what's going to happen. And I don't want to find out the hard way. If HARP is capable of inducing a pole shift, there's no way to stop it once it gets started. You know, this is not, you know, this is an area of research that should be much more closely monitored. There should be many more people, many more agencies and entities involved in decision making about this thing. It shouldn't just be a handful of tenured physicists working for the DOD doing what the DOD wants them to do.
Exactly. And that's where you pointed out the gap in our democratic process. So-called democratic process, where the congressmen aren't being briefed on this. It's all gone underground, and it's also being farmed out to private entities and private scientists who claim that it's a big much ado about nothing, which makes me suspicious right away. I didn't used to ascribe to the idea of there being a secret government, but I've read enough of your books and other books now to believe it wholeheartedly, you know. So I know that that what you say is true, but HARP is definitely a concern to the environment. I mean, what are some of the other things that that it could cause environmentally that we just don't know about?
It could cause, now again, this is theory, right? And the guys who are working on it will say, oh, no. But we don't know what it will do until it does it. But we can see that the scream of ELF that it is designed to generate is designed to bathe the entire world in extremely low frequency radio waves at exactly the same frequency that the human brain works at. There is potential for problems with that. It also is designed to go deep into the earth, and we know from let me give you an example here. The Memorex ad where the woman sings a high note and shatters a crystal glass. If you get the right frequency and enough energy into the right frequency, you cause things to vibrate. With that crystal glass, you could cause it to vibrate enough to break apart. This is one possible way that HARP or technologies like HARP could accidentally or intentionally induce earthquakes.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about TELSA. I was fascinated with the information that you revealed about he had some sort of an created an artificial earthquake and some lightning in Colorado Springs with his laboratory. And if you would give our listeners a little bit of background on this famous scientist who was sort of the mad scientist of yesteryear, who was involved in so many important research projects and did these bizarre experiments.
Nikola Tesla is not just a mad scientist. He was the mad scientist. He was the mad scientist that all the stories about mad scientists were built on. If you remember the old Universal movies, Universal Pictures Frankenstein movies, with Victor Frankenstein with his lab with these giant electrical things with the great shrieking arcs of electricity.
Yeah, you're making me laugh now.
That was Tesla's lab. In the 1890s, Tesla invited senators, newspaper reporters, Mark Twain, famous people to come to his lab, and he demonstrated the crazy things he could do with electricity. And that ended up as the prototype, the archetype for the mad scientist. Now, most people have never heard of Tesla, and this is one of the great screw jobs in American history. The world we live in was given to us by Tesla. Our world runs on AC, alternating current. Of the 46 basic patents in AC, Tesla holds 45 of them. Thomas Edison was doing all his work with DC, direct current. At the time that Tesla built his power plant at Niagara Falls and powered all of New York State with AC power, Edison had dynamos that were an entire city block by 10 stories tall that could barely power one square mile in New York City. Tesla almost put Edison out of business. General Electric, the GE, the worldwide giant corporation, was created by Edison to lease the right to use Tesla's AC patents. Now, Tesla also discovered radio.
Americans are unaware of his great contribution. Somehow he completely got the raw deal, didn't he?
Absolutely. I believe it was J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan, America's first billionaire, funded both Edison and Tesla, and in doing so had a monopoly on electricity in America. And Tesla discovered wireless transmission of electrical energy and was about to give electricity free to Americans, and Morgan flipped out, and Morgan started a whisper campaign against Tesla that destroyed him.
Mm-hmm. Well, he hadn't quite perfected that method. As I recall, your stories were hilarious in your book about what he did with Colorado Springs, and he set off an electrical current that just about fried everything there. If you could elaborate on that one event, I thought that was really, really funny.
There were several times in which he succeeded in sending electricity wirelessly. In the most famous one, he lit 400 of Edison's biggest light bulbs at a distance of 26 miles by pumping electricity into the ground and pulling it out of the ground 26 miles away. There were some side effects. It started 1,500 lightning strikes and blew out the power grid in three states.
Wow. Well, now you say power grid, but I thought this was prior to electrical current being used. By this time, there was electrical current in most households.
Yes, this was, 1899, that's it, it was 1899. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. did have an electrical grid starting in the 1880s. And it was Tesla who really made the electrical grid possible, because the prior to Tesla, the grid was a DC power grid and had these giant dynamos with wires running from them to the individual buildings around them. And then you had Tesla figured out AC, and suddenly you could run wires for miles and miles and power the entire state of New York, which is where it started in the 1880s and soon spread across the country.
That experiment sounds really scary. It's almost, he had AC on one end and DC on the other, and he just ran it all through the whole town, you know? That would that would really light things up. So basically, he was experimenting with things that are now, I guess, sort of a template, if you will. His scientific experiments are a template for all these secret projects that the U.S. government and other governments around the world are obviously developing. And it sounds to me as though no one is abiding by the United Nations treaty that you write of in your book called, what did you call it, NMOD?
NMOD, it's the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques. Environmental modification is NMOD, and so it's also known as the NMOD Convention. And the big problem is that the NMOD Convention, and I have a very lengthy analysis of the problems with that conference. Among the problems are is that it is unenforceable in any realistic sense, and it has been ignored by the world. Only 70 nations have signed on to it. There are 173 members of the UN. The U.S. CIA recognizes there being 236 political entities on this planet, and of them, only 70 have joined the UN convention. And because of this, there have been many violations of it, but you are only protected by it and held accountable by it if you're signatory to it. An example of this is Saddam Hussein.
Has China signed on? Has China signed on or not? Has China
I don't believe so. I do not believe
I wouldn't surprise them if they did.
Iraq is not a member. You may remember Gulf War I. Do you remember the cause of Gulf War I? The Kuwaitis were slant drilling into an Iraqi oil field and stealing Iraq's oil. Iraq got really pissed off about this, naturally, and tried to get the world community to do something, to act, to make the Kuwaitis stop stealing Iraqi oil. The Kuwaitis refused to do it. The world didn't act. And Saddam Hussein asked the U.S. if we had any problem with him taking matters in his own hands. And the conversation with our ambassador, April Gillespie, is very famous, in which she told him, no, we considered it an internal affair. At which point he went into Iraq and stopped them. Well, they then apparently hired us as mercenaries to push him back out. When we did push him back out, his response was to burn the 700 oil wells that were stealing his oil. Now,
the reason why he burned all that oil.
He burned all that oil because those oil wells were slant drilling into his oil well, into his oil field and stealing his oil. So he stopped them from doing that, but in doing so, created this vast plume of black smoke that lingered for months and drifted for thousands of miles. And when this happened, the world's meteorologists were saying there's going to be hell to pay for this, and they were dead on. That the monsoon season came in early, and a record-breaking heaviest monsoon ever hit Bangladesh. Bangladesh is a country with an average altitude of 20 feet. It had a 40-foot storm surge. There were 2.5 million people in trees, and over 100,000 people died. They died because of Saddam Hussein's burning the Iraqi oil wells, and he wasn't busted for it because he was not a signatory to the NMOD treaty. Bangladesh were not signatories to the NMOD treaty, so there wasn't any legal recourse for it.
Okay, now I want to, before we go, and we're running out of time, unfortunately, and this is all very fascinating, Jerry. We have about 2 or 3 minutes, and I'm going to ask you, because I know a lot of our listeners are keen on this subject of the chemtrails and how you feel this is being put to use and who's doing it and what can you tell us about the chemtrails?
Oh, no, that's such a hard question. I mean, I have 100 pages in the book on chemtrails, and you're going to try to get me to reduce 100 pages to 4 sentences.
Well,
this is cheating.
No.
But
I'll try.
I'm sorry?
I just know that our listeners are probably curious about the chemtrails and have their own thoughts. Everyone has their opinion about them.
Exactly. So here's what I came up with. is that there are persistent contrails, and there is intentional atmospheric release programs. They are not necessarily the same thing. Just because a contrail persists does not mean that it necessarily has some secret ingredient that makes it a chemtrail. On the other hand, they are not benign. They are not something nice. They're not something just completely normal, natural, don't worry about it, just continue ignoring it. No, they are a severe, major environmental problem. That is a severe, they are one of the primary factors in global warming. This is some doo-doo that is just starting to hit the fan. We're going to be hearing a great deal more of this over the next decade or so as people begin to understand, as scientists, as politicians begin to understand the problem with persistent contrails. Now, intentional atmospheric releases are something else entirely. And I can show that there has been a great deal of scientific investigation of how to mitigate global warming using injecting particulates, aerosols, into the atmosphere. Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory has spent more than 20 years and more than $200 million examining ways to mitigate global warming based on the principle that if greenhouse gases is the problem, that is, the theory here, which is not universally accepted, is that since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, we have been making gases like CO2, which go to the top of the atmosphere and work like the panes of glass in a greenhouse, allowing solar energy, solar heat in, and trapping it and preventing it from going back out again. The theory is if we simply make the greenhouse shinier, less solar heat will come in the first place. And Lawrence Livermore has proposed, that we inject shiny dust into the top of the atmosphere so as to make the Earth shinier. Edward Teller, the associate director of Lawrence Livermore, wrote up an article on this for Wall Street Journal. This has been seriously proposed by the United States government to the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, as one way to deal with global warming. Numerous scientific bodies have jumped on this bandwagon, like SRI, Stanford Research Institute, says, yes, we can do this, but the legal and environmental hurdles would be so high, we could never do it and tell anybody about it. And that's where the paper trail stops. I believe that they are indeed doing it. And realize that they don't dare tell us about it because there would be too much screaming and too much litigation taking place for them to be able to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they are releasing these toxic chemicals, they're certainly not benefiting our personal health any, and yet that is apparently what they intended or suggested to use in some of these writers that you're quoting. These scientists want to use it. So the theory goes that it's already being done, and, you know, we as citizens just need to find out more about it. It's too bad you have such a hard time getting to the end of the paper trail, as you say, Jerry, and it's like, well, you know, all we can say about it is that we believe that it exists, but when you can't go any farther to prove it and it's not being put out there in our democracy, what can we do as citizens about all these things like HARP, the chemtrails, and other forms of weather modification and the military-industrial complex and their evil plans? I mean, what can we do as citizens to address these issues? I mean, you're certainly doing a good job, I want to say, and I commend you in your research and bringing all these issues out into the open. But knowledge is power. I suppose we could write to all of our representatives and ask that more transparency be given to these issues which affect the environment.
You know, I write because that's what I know how to do. I'm not gifted with being an international problem solver. I don't have the skills to answer the question, what do we do about it? I know there's a problem. I can research the problem. I can document the problem. I can write it coherently so that other people can understand the problem. And I write so that other people who do have the necessary skills and positions can then take that information and move forward with it.
That's right. And you do a very good job. And as we are closing, I'd like you to highlight the various websites and tell our audience where people can pick up a copy of Weather Warfare by Jerry E. Smith.
Okay, my two books on this subject are Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature, and HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. They are available wherever you can buy books. They're also available online. You can visit my website, jerryesmith.com, that's JerryeSmith.com, where you'll learn a lot more about the books, about myself, other things I've done, with links to how you can buy them. I personally would prefer you to go into your local bookstore because I like local bookstores. I would like you to spend your money in your local bookstore and keep your money in your community in doing so. And by buying it in your local bookstore, that encourages them to stock and restock the book so that other people will see the book and think. And even if they don't buy the book, just getting them thinking is good for all of us. If you don't want to get it at your local bookstore, you can get it at AdventuresUnlimitedPress.com. You can get it at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us with your stimulating conversation and your book, which is a very interesting read. I want to recommend it to our listening audience, and please check out Jerry's website as well at www.jerryesmith.com. We're going to be concluding today with some special new music by Bob Murray, and the title of the song is Lotus Opening. And I thank our listeners for joining us. And again, I want to remind you before I go that I would like to hear from you in email if you're interested in being added to the spiritual journey to France with Mary Magdalene and the Black Madonna. Send me an email at maraciadi@charter.net. And also, I want to encourage you to visit my website at www.dianaspeakstotheworld.com, where you can pick up a copy of my latest book, With Love from Diana, Queen of Hearts, or sign up for an angel reading. Thank you all for joining us. It was a pleasure to have you today, Jerry. And we're going to close out now with Lotus Opening by Bob Murray.
Do you want to accelerate your ascension? Sign up for a reading with Archangel Michael through Marcia McMahon, dianaspeaks@hotmail.com, or site index at www.dianaspeakstotheworld.com.